Welcome to the Divorce Podcast, where we explore all aspects of ending relationships, separation, and parenting apart. If your marriage or partnership has ended, or you have friends and family who are separating, this podcast is for you. I'm Kate Daly, a relationship counsellor, divorce specialist, and co-founder of Amicable, the online legal service for separating couples. In each episode, we look at relationships and separation from different angles, including the emotional, legal, and social. I'm joined by experts and special guests who share their own unique stories, experience, and tips with the goal of helping people end relationships in a kinder and better way. In this episode, I was joined by Jack Gillis from the single parents charity Gingerbread to talk about child maintenance. Jack is the advice service manager at Gingerbread and is responsible for the single parents helpline and web chat service. Gingerbread has supported and championed single parents since 1918. They've changed laws, influenced government, and challenged stigma and stereotypes. Their expert advice and information help tens of thousands of single parents every year. We begin this episode by looking at the basics of child maintenance, including what it is and when you might be expected to pay. Jack explained how you can have a private arrangement or go through the child maintenance service, known as the CMS. We explore the pros and cons of private arrangements, as well as the enforcement powers of the CMS if you're the receiving parent and you aren't being paid. We touch on the benefits available for single parents and how to approach renegotiating your arrangements if your circumstances change, such as one parent losing a job. Gingerbread has a wealth of knowledge on child maintenance, so remember you can get in touch with them directly if you need more support. If you loved this episode, then please subscribe and rate us on your preferred listening platform. Jack.
Hi, thanks very much for having me.
Well, it's lovely for you to join us. Thank you very much indeed for your time today. And today's discussion, as I say, is all about child maintenance. And I think you're a bit of an expert. And I imagine that we can chew the fat about some of the trials and tribulations of child maintenance and how we can help people navigate that system. So let's kick off with some real basic stuff, if that's all right, Jack. Just explain to us, what is child maintenance?
Child maintenance describes payments which are made from one parent of a child or children to another, where the parent who is paying the maintenance does not live with the children the majority of the time. So typically, if, say, there is a situation where children live with one parent 5 days a week and their other parent 2 days, then the parent with 2 days would need to pay child maintenance to the other who has the majority care.
Right. This isn't just an arrangement between married parents, for example, is it? So it's anyone who's the parent of a child, irrespective of your kind of relationship status.
Exactly. When you come down to looking at the sort of the details, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit, if you have no income, then, you know, you're not expected to pay maintenance. But those are really the kind of the criteria.
Okay. And is it a legal requirement then, a statutory requirement? It's not something that's optional between parents. It's something that can be potentially enforced.
Yeah, it can be enforced. So many parents are able to agree between them a informal or a family-based arrangement, in which case there's no liability then. If you and I agree on something and there's no kind of sort of signature or no kind of agency involved, then there's no way that can really be enforced. But if you go through the Child Maintenance Service, which is a government agency, which is run through the Department of Work and Pensions, and if you have an arrangement which has been set up by them, any payments that were due under that arrangement can be enforced. So the enforcement can happen, but only if you have gone through Child Maintenance Service.
Okay. So do most people, that I mean, certainly most people say that come through Amicable, they will do a private arrangement most of the time, but it might be written into a consent order, for example. So that can be enforced, can it?
So the Child Maintenance Service has what they call like jurisdiction over the majority of kind of cases involving child maintenance. But yeah, some people do as part of the divorce process. Then yeah, consent order for maintenance can be agreed. And that is also legally enforceable.
And I think one of the important things just to sort of point out as well is that even if you do have it in a consent order, the court only has jurisdiction for child maintenance for 12 months. After that,
you're then in the same situation as everybody else. You either just carry on a private arrangement, or if there's a dispute about it, you'd have to then apply to the child maintenance service in order to then have a calculation done that could then be enforced. I'm going to come on to enforcement because I think that's a big bone of contention for many single parents. But before we do that, let's just explore a little bit more. What is child maintenance meant to cover? Because we get this a lot. So if you go online, the government has a calculator that you can use. And the calculator bases payments on the number of nights your child spends with you and your income. So it's a function of those two things and how many other kids you might be paying for or looking after. So it spits out a figure at the end, having asked those questions. What's that meant to cover?
Well, there's no criteria. There's no sort of list of what you may or may not spend maintenance on. It's essentially a contribution or like a portion of the paying parent's income, which is to maintain the child. And so if we're talking about the kind of the detail of that, it's money that you would spend on bringing up a child, anything from feeding, housing, educating, all of those things. But never do we kind of do the child maintenance service or... And I don't believe that the court would ever kind of say, oh, can I have a look at the itemized kind of spending of this money? It's essentially saying, as a parent who has children the majority of the time, as the main caregiver parent of the children, you are financially supporting them, you are raising them, you are responsible for a lot of kind of costs for those children. And therefore, the other parent who is not living with them should contribute towards that. So essentially, it's a contribution and not clearly defined. And I think for some parents, that may be kind of frustrating. Unfortunately, you don't have a right to request that.
And I guess if you're the parent that looks after the children the majority of the time, sometimes that calculation can feel like that's not half of their expenditure. You know, it can feel quite a small proportion depending on the kind of lifestyle that your kids have and that kind of stuff. So how common is it for people to pay like top up on top of, you know, their standard monthly installment, if you will?
If you've got an informal arrangement, then it can be any amount. And, you know, you can use the calculator on the CMS website as a guide, and a lot of people do. And yeah, that definitely should be kind of taken as a kind of a basic rate. And it would be great if it was kind of topped up. And some people do agree to do that and pay a bit extra. But if you go through the CMS, their calculation will be based on the income of the paying parent. Some things are taken into account as income, some things aren't. Self-employment income is exceptionally difficult for the CMS to kind of look at. And that is where there's a lot of contention. And we get many, many calls about those kind of issues, about income not being reported accurately and things. But, you know, in that case, it's going to sort of come out with a figure. And yeah, the majority of parents will just pay what's required of them through the, you know, if the majority of parents through the CMS, sorry, will pay what's required of them. So yeah, but you know, I think for anyone not in a CMS arrangement, you really can set the payment to be at whatever you both are comfortable with.
And do you, yes, a bit of a loaded question, is it? But do you think it's better to keep those arrangements private rather than involving the CMS? What are the pros and cons of having a CMS type arrangement?
Pros of having a CMS arrangement are that it means that if you don't have good communication with the other parent, if you're not in contact with them, or if there's problems, you know, if it's a problematic relationship and you'd rather not have that kind of communication about it, or if you know there's been problems in the past about communicating about maintenance, then going to the CMS provides kind of, you know, a third party, someone who can kind of sort of take some of that personal element of it away. There, it does mean that someone else that's not the two of you decides how much it's going to be, which again is, you know, can be a really good thing for some people who can't agree. It also makes it enforceable, as we said earlier. And it means that if you don't receive a payment for a number of months or years, then the CMS can get that money for you, which doesn't happen under an informal arrangement. But I suppose, you know, one of the, if we look at the pros of a family-based or informal arrangement, if you keep things informal, then you can be flexible on both sides. So, you know, and the flexibility and the kind of, you know, the communicating about it is kind of good for your relationship as people who are co-parenting. Sometimes someone going to the CMS can kind of raise the conflict in a kind of a relationship and can some people will take great exception to the fact that the kind of, in a way, the government has been involved with it. You know, it's kind of, so yeah. And I think that it tends to be better for your kind of, for your relationship as co-parents, if it doesn't go through the CMS, but you get that security. You know, unfortunately, some parents who aren't living with their children just refuse to pay anything, or are, in some cases, some extreme cases, we hear of sort of abusive behavior continuing after two people have separated, through things like money, through maintenance, and through contact with the children. And using the CMS is a good way of kind of minimizing the sort of the amount of kind of control or coercion that can happen through maintenance.
It's not free, is it, the CMS, if you're in that position? I think you have to pay. Can you just explain a little bit about how that works if you have a CMS agreement?
The majority of people that use the CMS will just have to pay an application fee. And then you would go into an arrangement called direct pay, which is where CMS tell you what the calculation is and they send you a letter, but then they don't, you know, they aren't involved after that. So you don't have to pay them anything. But some people have an arrangement called collect and pay, which you would have if you had a CMS arrangement before, but the other parent wasn't paying. So collect and pay would be introduced as a kind of an incentive. It's like the paying parent pays the CMS pays the receiving parent, and that way they can see straight away if payments have been missed. Another reason why people are on that system is because it is, if they show evidence that they've experienced domestic violence from that parent. If you can demonstrate that, then you can go straight on to collect and pay, which means that you don't have to have any communication with the other parent. It's done completely separately. If you under collect and pay, you pay a proportion, so the money is taken from both sides.
But on that point then, the receiving parent, who potentially is a victim or survivor of domestic abuse, is still having to pay for the fact that it's not safe for them to communicate with their other parent.
Yeah, you could think of it as a tax. They're taking some.
It feels rather unfair.
And there's a lot of myths about it as well. A lot of people kind of think, well, I won't, you know, I'm not going to go through the CMS because, you know, I'll have to pay 50p for every pound or something like that. So for a lot of people, there is only that application fee. And I suppose some people that have to use collect and pay would say, well, I'm not going to use the CMS if I have to contact this person. So I'd rather pay this amount or have this amount taken off than none.
There's a £20 application fee for making a CMS application. And then the rates for the paying parent, it's 20%. And for the receiving parent, it's 4%. So I guess is that money that effectively is taken off what they're paying rather than added on? So your child effectively is getting 24% less ultimately, or does it not work like that?
It doesn't work quite like that. I think the paying parent has to pay extra.
So they pay a 20% fee and then the receiving parent a 4% fee. Yeah, I get that, makes more sense.
And I think that the only thing that comes off the money for the children is the 4%.
And how effective is the CMS then at actually doing what it says on the tin and actually making those collections from rogue parents who aren't prepared to pay?
That's a good question. I suppose...
Well, I think I know the answer to this, which is pretty rubbish from personal experience.
Well, yeah, unfortunately. And I think even the CMS knows that it's not currently performing as well as it could, when it comes to enforcement. So, yeah, they have the powers. They have a lot of powers and recently have been kind of granted some more powers to enforce. So they can do anything from kind of, you know, putting someone into collect and pay to a deduction order where they take money directly from someone's salary or their bank account, all the way through to charges being placed on property and capital, to things like your passport being taken from you, or even prison time, you know, is the extreme end. But in reality, getting them to get there is incredibly rare. It's very, very rare. And, you know, like any kind of government agency, I suppose they don't have the resources to meet the huge demand. The amount of single parents who are not receiving their maintenance is shocking. And it's difficult for the CMS to meet that. But yeah, it is a big problem. It's one of the things that we, you know, receive the most calls about, really, when it comes to child maintenance. It's that the CMS is either not enforcing properly, it's not listening when someone's saying that the calculations are wrong. So that's, yeah, that's a real, a kind of, yeah, a big thing, really.
What do we have to do then as people going through divorces and separations and the separated parents to try and get things on a better footing so that more people pay because they feel it's the right thing to do, rather than get into a situation where we have to have an enforcement model, which clearly doesn't work. What's got to shift, do you think, in the whole narrative of separation and single parenting?
I suppose to start off with, you need to look at the reasons why people don't pay. There are many reasons. There might be that they genuinely can't afford to, that, you know, the cost of living crisis has made it very difficult for paying parents to meet the amounts that they have to pay, especially if they have other, you know, requirements that the CMS doesn't take into account, you know, such as debts and things. And so there's that. But then there are other reasons why the paying parent may be other issues between the two parents that are unresolved. It could be to do with something like contact. It could be to do with the divorce. And unfortunately, it's the last thing that should happen. But quite often, sort of maintenance is used as a sort of a bargaining tool. It's like, well, you know, I won't pay you maintenance unless you let me do this or that. And the children should be protected from that.
That's a really important point, isn't it, Jack? Because not seeing your kids as unfair and wrong as that can be sometimes is not a reason not to pay child maintenance, is it? As far as the law is concerned, the obligation to pay child maintenance is not predicated on seeing your kids.
Exactly. And that's a problem from both angles. So, you know, many receiving parents say, well, you know, he's quite happy to, or she's quite happy to come and take the kids out, you know, every weekend and buy them expensive things, but they don't pay me any maintenance. Or, you know, it's like, I'm not allowed to see them, but I still have to pay. So it is. Yeah, you're right. It's a problem. The two things aren't mutually exclusive, I suppose.
No, and you can understand there are always going to be situations where it's not safe for contact to take place or whatever. But for the vast majority of people, that isn't the case. And withholding contact and withholding that relationship isn't the right, you know, the right way of going about things. And you shouldn't be withholding contact in or just because your ex isn't paying. That, again, it's the other side of the coin, isn't it? You shouldn't withhold payment because you're not seeing the kids. And the reverse is also true. So you can see that this is complicated from all sides, but the argument should be the children should be paid for and they should have a relationship with both parents where it's safe for that to happen. I think that's the key.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'd be tempted to say that I think that the issue of maintenance not being paid is much more significant than contact being refused. But I do agree with you. And I think it's important to see it from kind of all angles. And the thing that you have to keep coming back to is the children, is the what's in their best interests, you know. And as you say, you know, according to the law, according to the family court, you know, it is in the best interest of the child to have as much of a relationship as possible with both parents. And that shouldn't be predicated on whether or not, you know, maintenance is being paid.
I guess ultimately, you know, from our perspective, our service Amicable is all about trying to ensure that when people go through a separation or a divorce, that we're helping parents stay connected and empowered to be great co-parents. That's a big part of the kind of ethos behind the company. And so trying to make sure that the negotiations and the emotions that come up when you separate, making sure those things are all resolved and battened down, enables you to then go on and focus on the co-parenting relationship. And hopefully things like maintenance become just part and parcel of your working life. But it's not the case for everybody. And I get that there are some people who simply don't know where the other parent is. So what can you do if you're in that situation? If you are a solo lone parent, can you still make a child maintenance claim? Does the child maintenance service have any way of tracking down partners?
Not so much. No, I suppose they don't do a lot of tracing. When you make an application for child maintenance, you need to give as much information as you know about the other parent. You don't have to go to necessarily say, you know, the national insurance number and things like that. It could just be the name and address or the address of their employer. I mean, quite often, you know, people say, well, I didn't know his or her address, but I did know this and I did know that, and the CMS haven't done anything. But technically they can look, but they can't, unfortunately, track someone if they're kind of deliberately, you know, hiding. There's an interesting thing where, but quite one of the problems that we get questions about is that the other parent is in another country. And there is actually something that you can do in that situation, depending on where the country is. There is a kind of an agreement between countries to kind of enforce child maintenance if, you know, one parent is in that country. There's something called REMO, which is the Reciprocal Enforcement of Maintenance Orders. And it's basically, yeah, a lot of European Union countries are on there. And it means that it's complicated still, but it is possible to get maintenance from someone that lives elsewhere.
I guess all of the time you're talking about this as well, you're looking at perhaps potentially getting professional help, aren't you? Someone to help you with all of this. And that then has its own cost implications, which may outweigh the child maintenance. I suppose that's the tricky thing for people, isn't it? It's how much money do you throw at this before it becomes cash negative to do it, to follow it up? It's the frustration as much as anything, isn't it, of not resolving your relationship breakdown to the point where you can make ongoing children arrangements.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it is fair to say, you have to be fair and say that you can do like a REMO maintenance application without legal help, but it does involve, you know, applying for a court order for maintenance, which is not the easiest thing to do. So you're right, it can be costly. And that's the big problem, is that, you know, there's enough barriers to maintenance, you know, emotional barriers, as, you know, as we've talked about, and kind of, you know, quite serious things like, you know, safety for the children and the parent. So there's enough barriers as there are, really, to prevent people from applying, let alone adding, you know, there being more financial kind of hurdles to get over.
And you mentioned the cost of living crisis just a couple of minutes ago. What impact is that having on people? Well, what are you hearing through Gingerbread?
So the cost of living crisis has had an impact on maintenance in the sense that more parents need it that who didn't need it before, because the cost of living's gone up, other things have gone down. So, you know, that people are looking to kind of to boost their income in whatever way, which has led, you know, unfortunately, to those parents that were, you know, resisting asking for maintenance because of, you know, safety reasons, because of domestic abuse in the past, are being forced in a way to make contact to get that maintenance. And for the perspective of paying parents, you know, it's meaning that it's harder and harder to meet the demands, you know, the amount that they have to pay. And we're finding that parents are kind of questioning or kind of sort of going back and forth a bit about what the amount should be. So in an informal arrangement, they'll just be talking between them about wanting to lower or increase the amount. And if they're going through the CMS, then they'll potentially be appeals going on with the CMS on both sides, saying, well, you know, this shouldn't be taken into account and I should be paying less. So yeah, it's having a big impact. It's causing people, you know, who were sort of quite, you know, living on the sort of the margins of kind of being able to afford their kind of expenses to just, you know, not being able to anymore. And you have to get your money from somewhere. And
it's a real tough one, isn't it? Because when we have the same questions, you, on the one hand, you've got a paying parent whose mortgage has gone up or whose rent has gone up, hasn't maybe had a pay rise or whatever. And you've got then the receiving parent whose mortgage has gone up or rent has gone up. And so you're right. You're trying to pull from the same pie, aren't you? So do you offer guidance and help on how you can work through those things? Is that what Gingerbread does, or is there another set of professionals you tend to rely on for that kind of help?
We do, to an extent, we kind of talk to people about how to kind of communicate about these things, but we offer more of a practical advice service. So we more kind of, if you ask us about these questions, we'll be talking to you about how to apply to the CMS and, you know, sort of practical questions about arranging the payments. But we would kind of encourage people to use mediation in any kind of matter involving maintenance and contact arrangements. And we do refer to sort of a number of different organizations, charities, such as, there's one whose name I've instantly forgotten. Oh, we refer to the National Family Mediation Council and Family Lives as well. But yeah, just lots of different organizations, really. And CAFCAS as well, for, I suppose that's more for contact, but they kind of produce sort of some good kind of information about kind of co-parenting and communicating. But yeah, and then there's obviously, you know, services such as yourselves that people can use also.
Exactly. So we help lots of people negotiate their child maintenance agreements, particularly when there's been a change in circumstances. You know, sometimes there's illness or redundancy, and it can be really difficult to be able to work through those things and looking at how you might have to draw down on capital to keep the payments going temporarily and what that means for each parent. So, yeah, there are lots of organisations that can help, and it's better to try and keep those lines of communication open as best you can. And it's kind of tricky, isn't it? But it's resisting the ultimatums, isn't it? And not just, like you say, withdrawing contact or doing something drastic when payments have to change. I think there has to be the expectation that in a cost of living crisis, things do change. And I always think there's a temptation when you've gone through quite a lengthy divorce process or you've negotiated everything out and you kind of think, oh, we've done it now. That's it. I don't have to look at it again. But these agreements are live, and because kids change and their expenditure changes, and as they grow up, they need different things. They become more expensive. You have to navigate things like, I don't know, college or university or driving lessons or even just keeping up with the old mobile phone bills. That's going to be a bit of a chore when you've got more than one kid. So it's kind of, there are lots of things that you have to keep renegotiating all the time with children. I think that's kind of quite key.
Yeah. And parents' lives change. I think, you know, as we've talked about kind of the cost of living, but, you know, if someone's employment changes, you know, if they stop having employment or go part-time or money goes up or down, those are big changes. And the point about university is a really good one, because your sort of liability to pay maintenance for children typically stops when they leave full-time education. But as we all know, you know, your financial responsibility continues long after they turn 18. And we hear from a lot of single parents that struggle with that as well.
Yeah, because that's such a big commitment now as well, isn't it? And loading kids with the debt themselves. And even if you can get the loans, there's still lots of incidental expenses that need paying. And it can be really tough on single parents at that point when, like you say, you know, from the paying parent's perspective, that agreement's come to an end, they're off the hook. And then you've got kids who are still, you know, financially dependent, for want of a better phrase. So, yeah, it's tough. What about benefits, Jack? You mentioned that you can give advice on benefits. Are there any particular benefits that single parents where there's maintenance issues should be looking out for, especially?
Well, the first thing we'd say, if you're looking to bring in more money for your family, for your children, then maintenance would be one of the things that you would look at. But we'd also recommend maximising your income by ensuring that you're claiming all the benefits you're entitled to. So there's nothing, unfortunately, in lieu of maintenance. And that's something that people quite often say is, well, you know, for whatever reason, I cannot and will not be able to get child maintenance. But is there a substitute from the government that people can get who can't get maintenance? And you'd think there would be, but unfortunately there isn't. So it's about ensuring that you're claiming the right amount of benefits, which might be the kind of the older benefits, such as housing benefit, income support tax credits, if you're still on that system, or the new system, which is universal credit. Gingerbread, we can calculate benefits for you. So we can kind of check that you're getting the right amounts and look at how changing your circumstances might affect how much you can get. So yeah, I think it's important to look sort of at the bigger picture for single parents and look at kind of, you know, everything from maintenance to benefits to, you know, your home and how you're sort of paying for energy and things like that. It's kind of the whole kind of picture. There's a lot of sort of fine tuning and planning that single parents are having to do to kind of, you know, literally sort of juggling and spinning plates to kind of make tweaks to different aspects of finances to kind of get it right. But we find that single parents are some of the most sort of, you know, ingenious people at doing that, and it's unfortunate that they have to be, but yeah, they are.
Well, I always say what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, so yeah. You become very resourceful. Just on the point of maintenance and benefits, so do benefits impact child maintenance?
No.
Okay, so if you claim more child maintenance, it's not going to impact your universal credit. Because that's quite interesting, because that's not the case with spousal maintenance, which is another common thing that you get in a consent order when you're divorcing. Spousal maintenance does impact your universal credit pound for pound, but not child maintenance. So that's really important for people to understand. So when you're negotiating around those two different types of maintenance, there are different ways of loading more into child maintenance so that you can still continue to keep your benefits. Is that right?
That's yeah, very good. And it's a big myth actually that I think occasionally, you know, the benefit people tell you that is like, but no, child maintenance for I think over 10 years now has absolutely no bearing on what you receive through Universal Credit or any of the benefits. And yeah, so it kind of, it did. There was a time where shockingly, you know, if you were receiving maintenance, a percentage of your benefits would be taken, but no. And it's, you know, it's that's as it should be. On the other hand, if you're claiming benefits and you are paying maintenance, it will affect the amount that you have to pay, and it kind of can, it might mean that you're like, depending on the benefit, it might mean that you're liable to pay the flat rate, which is just £7 a week, or the nil rate, which is zero. So it has an effect on that. Yeah,
so the flat rate and the nil rate, then, just to be clear on those two as well. So there is a system where if you're not earning money or you're on benefits, there is a flat rate of £7 a week, is it, or something around that?
Yeah, yeah.
Definitely. That you would still pay so that you're still in the habit of contributing.
Yeah.
And then there's a nil rate. When does the nil rate apply then?
That's if you are on certain other benefits. I think it's like disability benefits, or regardless of the benefits you're on, if you have an income of under £100, I believe, then you pay zero. So yeah, and £7 is, you know, from Universal Credit is actually, you know, per week is a sort of a significant amount, you know. But we do, yeah, we've heard sort of there's an increase of because what can sometimes happen is if you end employment and you go onto benefits, you tell Universal Credit, and then they will stop all of your payments for a while, and then they will, you know, you'll have to stay on the flat rate or the nil rate for many months long after the other parent's gone back into employment. So it can cause problems as well.
So it sounds like, as with all benefits, there are cash flow issues in terms of the timing and the starting, so that can impact. So again, you've got to be able to have hopefully some dialogue around that, be able to keep things smooth and even and try and make those adjustments yourself, maybe, rather than just relying on what the CMS says.
I would, yeah, and I think that's your general point, and I completely agree, is that you know, these are reasons why having as open and as kind of positive dialogue between you. And, you know, we have to be really honest and say it's not always possible, but if you can, it will be in everyone's best interest, especially the children's, because it means that, you know, you can give each other a bit, you know, a bit of flexibility, and ask for a bit more if you need it, and accept a bit less if, you know, if you're able to. And yeah, it has really, I think it has positive effects for the longevity of your co-parenting if you're able to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I'm just conscious of time. We're coming to the end. So any final tips or things we haven't covered about child maintenance in general? Is there anything we haven't talked about that you think is important for people to know?
I think that there is a lot more that we could talk about in terms of how you sort of manage the CMS and how you use the service and holding them to account, and things like what you can do if you think that the CMS have incorrectly calculated because everything's based on the paying parent's income, and there are lots of mistakes they can make, the CMS, but also, unfortunately, and it's very unfortunate this happens, but it is possible for paying parents to kind of manipulate their income figures in lots of different ways. And, you know, sometimes that's even harder to believe than parents that just refuse to pay, because it's kind of the effort that some people go to reduce the amount that they pay is quite significant, especially, you know, with self-employed people. If the money is, quite often the CMS will go by your HMRC record, and we know the problems there are with some people who are, you know, manage to not pay the right amount of tax. So yeah, that's a big area. Not necessarily, it's not something we could ever kind of cover on this podcast. And I'd say that's the kind of thing people can call us about. But I think my kind of key takeaway from this is that there is a system there. There's the CMS if you need it. If you're unable to, you know, come to an agreement, use the CMS. You know, if you are able to, then not using the CMS definitely has many benefits and is worth kind of pursuing.
Yeah, I mean, I've had all three arrangements. I've had a court order, I've had CMS order, and I've now got a private arrangement. The private arrangement is by far the better deal in terms of it being less painful and just finding it an equilibrium where a contribution at least is being made, even if it's not what I would like. That's sometimes it's better to try and work with what you've got, you know. And I get that everyone's in very different circumstances, and that's maybe very easy to say for some of us and not for everybody. But sometimes the fight takes such a lot of energy that you can redeploy that energy somewhere else for better effect.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, Jack, it's been lovely talking to you. Thanks so much for all your insights about child maintenance and CMS. How can people contact Gingerbread? How can they get in touch if they want to find out more?
Probably the easiest way is to go to our website, which is gingerbread.org.uk. Yeah, we have a helpline. I will read the number out. It's 0808 802 0925, and it's open Monday to Friday, free phone. We also do web chat as well through our website, gingerbread.org.uk, and I have a wealth of information.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much. Gingerbread is an absolutely phenomenal charity. We're absolutely delighted that we've been able to partner with you this year, and it's been a real pleasure talking to you today, Jack. Thank you.
Likewise. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.